You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Well, don't touch that dial. It's not Rick Franzi today. It's Paul Roberts. I'm the producer of the show, and once in a while, I get to come out from behind the curtain and fill in for Rick, who's out of town today and yesterday. So until next week, you'll have to put up with me, which is kind of fun because I get to see if I can do as good as Rick. Hard shoes to fill in for, but as he does such a great job of gathering insights and information. You are, of course, listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. When this show originally started, we just did a show here in Southern California where we interviewed local business owners, and the whole idea was, what can we learn vicariously from them? What can we learn, we as a community of business owners and executives, what can we learn from talking to other people? So we're always looking for, yes, everybody gives a 30-second commercial about what they do and how they get into it, but what we're really looking for are those insights, those actionable insights, those learning moments, as Rick calls them, where you say, you know what, I never thought of doing that, or wow, it's good to hear I'm not the only one going through that trouble, and that's an innovative idea that they've got. So, with that, without further ado, let's talk to our first guest here. No pressure. Jeff Jaime, did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Okay, well, Jeff is the CEO of Torian Corporation. Tell us what Torian Corporation is.
Thank you for having me on. The Torian Corporation is a company that is, you know, when people ask me, tell me about your company, I say,
right,
you have to know two things.
Okay.
One is what we do, and two is who we are. What we do is, today, what we do is cybersecurity for, largely for the U.S. government, mainly for the Department of Defense.
Okay.
We do software engineering, et cetera. But who we are is much more powerful, which is inspired by a book called The Dream Manager, which I think is pretty unique and actually basic.
Never heard of it. Okay, so, we'll talk some more about that, or
so
tell us about it.
Who we are, and I'll fill you in about that if we get a moment to do that.
All right, and you're based in where?
Based headquarters in San Antonio, Texas, and we have a satellite office in Washington, D.C.
All right, and is this a couple people or 100 people? I mean, give us some size of the company here.
We're now 2 years going, and we're now up to 27 people.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah. And just give us a little background. Was this something, obviously you must have worked in cybersecurity or in IT or something like that. What's your background? How did you create this company?
I'm a retired Air Force officer. I worked in the cybersecurity component of the Air Force near the Pentagon when I retired. But long before that, I have this to create a company of some sort. And during my last 10 years in the Air Force, I realized that this was a space I really wanted to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I retired, I worked for a larger firm for 2 years, large 100-pound gorilla company. And I learned some things there that I knew were missing in the workplace.
Okay. Can you give us some example? What was missing that you saw? What did you want to step in and fill for?
The notion of active disengagement.
Active disengagement. Are you going to have to explain that one?
Okay. So when somebody's actively disengaged, they might come in, they show up, but they're not really inspired to be there. And it becomes a point where they're just coming in to collect the check.
Right.
Not really engaged in something that's really motivational to them. And it is the case that the worst case of active disengaged people are those that have already quit, but they're still there.
The lights are on, but nobody's home. They've already checked out, and they're just they're still getting a check. Well, it's interesting. That's
not
a topic.
Their fault, by the way. It's not their fault. I want to make that a point to be clear. It's not necessarily their fault.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because
the culture.
We've had, again, the whole idea is to learn from each other. We're always trying to come up with these things, and I think you've tapped into something interesting I want to explore for a minute here. This idea that somehow corporate life maybe needs to change, or maybe has already changed on better companies. And here's what I'll explain it a bit. We had somebody on our show a while ago here, a gentleman by the name of Norman Wolf, who used to be an executive for HP, for Hewlett Packard. And he left a number of years ago, kind of disillusioned with the corporate world and what he was seeing, people turning into robots, exactly what you're talking about. And so he started a business practice and went off, really, kind of like on a, almost like a search for answers. He traveled the world. He got into all sorts of spiritual things and philosophical things and everything. And he was really trying to come up with some basic question. The question he was saying is, why aren't companies achieving what they set out to? They all have a goal. They all have a lofty mission statement, but they don't always achieve it. What holds them back? And he came to the conclusion, which is kind of what I'm hearing you say, that companies don't function well as a machine anymore. You know, for 50 years since we came up with this whole idea of corporations and big companies at the back in the 1900s, when Henry Ford and all these people invented big companies, the idea was to turn people into parts. You know, and you automated everything. They were robots, and the more they acted robotically, the better it worked. And now we're starting to see that there's some disadvantages of that robotic model. Talk about that a little bit. You know, you're saying this act of disengagement, that somehow by being part of this machine, you become less human. You start to become brain dead.
Right. So sort of paraphrasing from the book, the dream manager that inspired me to create the company on the foundation, mm-hmm. that the future of our organization or any organization and the potential of our employees are intertwined. The organization can only become the best version of itself to the extent that our people are striving to become the best versions of themselves. And the way any person becomes the best version of themselves is when they reach their personal, not company, their personal mm-hmm. hopes
exactly.
and dreams that they have for themselves in life. When they achieve that, they become a better, actively engaged person and a better version of themselves. Our company, just as copied right out of the book, we help manage them to achieve these dreams, personal dreams.
Phenomenal. Okay, and who wrote this book? Let's get a plug for it.
Matthew Kelly wrote the book called The Dream Manager.
And how did you come across this book? Was it handed to you, or did you buy it?
I read it by accident. Mm-hmm. The reason why I say I read it by accident, because when I was working in this 800-pound gorilla company, I picked up and I'd like to read for self-improvement, and I gathered a bunch of books, and I mm-hmm. picked this one, and I thought it was going to be the 5C Better Manager, and it totally wasn't that.
Yes, this isn't the one-minute manager, how to motivate people and make them bend to your will and all this stuff.
Well, this is a life-changing story in the book.
I'm going to suggest I'm going to give you a challenge. You know, maybe there's another book I can recommend to you. I haven't read this book by Norman Wolf. It's supposedly going to come out on Amazon next month. The guy's name is Norman Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. There's an E at the end. And it sounds a lot like what you're talking about. He calls his book The Living Organization. And he says that we have to realize that that corporations are made up of living human beings, human parts, not automated parts. And so there is a collective soul, there is a collective consciousness, all this notion that, and if you don't pay attention then, if you think that's foolish, then you're just going to get a bunch of brain-dead people that, yeah, you can control them, but you sure can't get much creativity out of them. You sure can't get any... they can't react to situations. They can't act on their own. You get a much more living, fluid, dynamic organization, and one that ultimately people are thrilled to be part of, passionate to be part of, as opposed to just trudging to work and hand me the check. So it sounds like kind of the same thing. Well, check his book out as well. I'd be curious to know if you see any similarities there. All right, so you've tried to create a whole different organization here. How do you get feedback on that organization? How do you know if you're achieving your results? Is it, do you gather people together? Do you bring in outside consultants? Do you have anonymous surveys? How do you know if you're achieving this different sort of organization?
Well, I have a person who is actually titled as the Dream Manager.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, wow.
No, okay. That's actually the inspired piece of the book. Is actually, we have a person's job who it is to check in with every single employee and do a pulse check on where they are at achieving their personal goals in life. You know, sometimes when we first started, we would pay to see somebody's dream get realized. Mm-hmm. And then I really learned the most important aspect of it is paying attention. Paying attention is not the same thing necessarily as paying. When you pay attention to what drives a person's core in their heart, what they really want out of life, they could be mopping floors or flying an airplane. It doesn't matter.
Right.
As long as they're getting what they want out of life, what they envision for themselves to receive out of life, and you help them accomplish it, that is how you win the war for talent, and that's how you retain people that just by default become extremely loyal to an entity that's helping them achieve to become the best versions of themselves.
And again, I'll give you a... I've never heard of this before. I mean, you're talking about something radically different than my own experience with corporate America here. And the only thing I can relate it to is this interview we did earlier with Norman Wolf. And in his organization, he threw out something that stuck in my mind. He said, you know, he said, how is it that nonprofits get people to work for them? Long hours, low pay. You know, you think they'd just be going through people all the time and they'd never be successful. And yet, they are successful and they get some darn good talented people that work for these things because passion. And it's I suspect it goes deeper into that, what you're saying. Somehow, they feel like they're making a contribution. Somehow, they feel like they're doing some greater good. Somehow, there is something about their dream that fits in with this job and they therefore tap into that, and they rely upon it because they can't pay them. They can't compete for top talent, so they've got to find other ways to compensate people. It sounds like you've tried to work on that
if
as well.
If we're doing things like, so our, the purpose of our company, and I can describe what we do and who we are, but the purpose why we exist is to find work, create jobs, change lives. And it's not changing just the lives of our employees. We're actively changing lives for people in the community, for kids who may not have hope. We provide them some hope by paying attention to them, by going, you know, last year we purchased a bunch of Christmas gifts and we actually played Santa Claus and had a huge meal for a group of kids that had been taken away from their parents because of abuse situations.
Yeah,
they find
very familiar with that, yeah.
Too many days that have hope. We provide that, and I think that's part of being a good community citizen. And I think when people, when your employees, your team members, see that they're part of something greater than selfishness, they are inspired to be part of a good movement.
All right, I'll give you another example, and I'm not trying to make myself sound like a good guy here, but a couple of years ago, my wife had been married previously, had a grown daughter, and we've been together for 20 years, never really thought about having kids, and all of a sudden I felt like, oh boy, I've missed something here. So in my late 40s, mid-40s, I started talking about we should adopt. And my wife's like, oh my God, you know, we're 50, 45, you know, it's a little late in the game here. Why didn't we talk about this when we could have done something about it? But we're good Irish Catholics. We go to church, and a woman comes and talks about abused kids in the foster care system who have no home. I'm going to start choking up here. And so we thought, okay, we looked into this, and we make a long story short, we ended up adopting a little girl from Mexico. And she wasn't a baby. She was 10 years old. You know, she had been had a terrible life and lots of abuse and all sorts of things. And people, all that when I would tell this story, they'd say, oh, my God, that's so wonderful, and you did this. And I had to finally stop patting myself on the back and said, you know, I didn't do this to be a noble saint. I did this because there was something missing in my life. I miss that experience. I miss that connection. And I get more out of it. I'm sure she gets a lot out of it. I'm sure, you know, I know it's been miraculous for her, but it's been equally, if not greater, miraculous for me. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. Don't do things just because you think you're going to, oh, it's good, and I'm going to check that off, and people will like it. Do it because you're going to get something out of it. You're going to take yourself someplace deeper than you thought you were going. You'll find some other fulfillment. And it isn't too often that I find people saying, oh, my job is the source of my inspiration. It's the source of my good deeds. It brings out the best in me. That's kind of what I'm hearing you say.
Right. There's another good book. It's a quick read called The Go-Giver, which describes the notion that the more you give, the more successful you become.
Yeah.
And you don't give to receive. If you receive as a result of it down the road, then that's great. But to your point about accomplishing the joy of your adopted daughter, mm-hmm. and the gap filling that you experience, I always say, if you can accomplish more than one thing with the same set of actions, then you are really well ahead of most people.
Yeah,
so that's what you did. You accomplished fulfillment for
yourself. Obviously I'm sure we helped her, but
for her.
But it has changed my life in ways I could talk about for hours, you know. And it
right.
and again, I didn't do it just to be viewed as a good guy. I did it because there was a hole in my heart. There was a hole in my life, and I wanted to fill it. And so it was the most selfish of interests. I had me in mind. And in the process, I ended up helping somebody else, too.
And she's helping you.
She's helping us, and it's helped all of us, my wife and I and everything. You know, it's just been a miracle, really has. So I never thought of companies being sort of the path to that greater good. A company, for many people, is a what would you call it? It's more of a something you endure. It's a necessity. It's not the vehicle to achieve. It might be for some high earners. Yeah, it allows me to do great things and achieve great awards and get lots of money. But I suspect that for most people, they don't view their job as the path to greater good.
Right. Now, if the owners of those companies would take the time to pay attention to see what's inside the hearts of their people who are, it's no secret that the success of the organization and the betterment of the person are intertwined. Those have to be matched up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ignore it, then you get this revolving door of turnover that, you know, you might always be scratching your head wondering why you have this problem.
Right.
And when you treat everybody the exact same way and get these blanket, you know, superficial rewards that, yeah, it sounds good, but everybody got that. And you dig into the person's heart and see what it is that motivates them, what drives them to be who they are. Even a person that has a lot of bad luck, maybe they're in an orphanage, they're still a human. They have dreams just like everybody else.
Well, and that's what Norman was saying in his interview again. I mean, you're bringing back all these things. I feel like I'm talking to two different versions of the same thing. I've heard it now twice in the last couple of months, and that amazes me here. He was saying that it isn't just that the company is alive, because the cells of the organization aren't parts. They're not mechanical parts. They're living cells. That's why he views it like a body. You know, the cells come together and form some sort of greater organism here, but they're still individually living cells that somehow glom on together and take on this shape called a human being or whatever. And he said, as a part of that, he said, if that's true, if the corporation is somehow a living organization or a living grouping of all these individually alive cells here, if it's alive, then that means that it has a greater purpose and it has a soul. And he said, I'm not trying to be spiritual, but, you know, there, too many corporations are soulless. Isn't that what we all hate about our image of Wall Street and everything, that it's soulless, it doesn't care, it's an uncaring thing, and people are just numbers on a spreadsheet, and that we keep trying to search for a way that corporations, if we're going to spend so much of our time and effort and life in these groups, these associations, these living bodies, then maybe we should have them do more than simply make stuff.
Right. There's a couple of, you asked me earlier about some level of acknowledgement that we're on the right track. Mm-hmm. One, we see people achieving their dreams. Two, we don't have a high turnover. And another tool, we're gratefully recognized out of 200 companies in competition. We finished in the top 10 this year, and last year we were number 13 in the small business category of best places to work.
There you go.
In San Antonio. And we just started a couple years ago, so it's very fulfilling for me to learn that we must be doing something right. We're not perfect, not by no way perfect.
How do you get people to open their minds to this, though? Because, all right, so I walk in, and I'm expecting a good pay and a good work environment, but I'm not expecting to be taken to some higher spiritual level here. I'm not expecting to be part of some group effort to do good deeds. Do people resist it? Do they scratch their head when they see it? Or do they just jump in and say, oh my God, this is wonderful?
Well, the fact that you're not expecting it is proof that it's a cancer that we can cure. And this is why I don't keep this secret. I want everybody to copy good. It just like I copied it. But it takes a few days for some to get it. But once they do, it's amazing how actively engaged they become, mm-hmm. because they know that the success of any company that they're trust to acknowledge their hopes and dreams and help them realize them, mm-hmm. that they want to be more successful. And so it just builds upon itself. And I think that's really the power of this whole movement.
I don't want to use too many religious metaphors here, but how do you preach about this? How do you convert people to this? How do you spread the gospel here?
Well, it's not hard to convince somebody that we're wanting them to achieve what's already in their heart.
Right.
It's just that we care about it.
Well, I'm thinking less now internally, but externally. You say you want others to adopt this. You don't want to keep this a secret.
Oh, yes. Other companies. I want them to copy it.
So how do you make people aware of this? Like any sort of, again, I'll use a religious metaphor. If you suddenly see the light and you feel converted and you're like, oh my God, I found a better way. Don't you want to go out and tell everybody about it? And of course, people look at you like you're a nut. But, you know, how do you spread the news, the good news that there's another way to do business? How do you encourage other businesses to follow your model? Just by example? Just by talking about it?
Example, talking about it, getting word out, like on this call that we're on now. We get printed and written up in the paper, and the articles talk about that.
Have you ever tried other networking groups or other, you know, peer groups or other ways that were places where businesses gather together to share information and ideas?
Absolutely. I'm in a peer group now. I'm in the Entrepreneurs Organization.
Oh, good. Okay.
EO, which is 7,500 people worldwide, and we have a chapter here in San Antonio. I'm a member of it, and I take no pause in getting a chance to blurt out what the Dream Manager is about and how it's helping our company, because I want them to copy it too.
Good, because I belong to a peer group as well, and this show is largely put on by people who believe in peer groups. So I'm glad to hear that, because I think peer groups are a powerful way. It's another sort of new sort of model that of businesses coming together in a confidential setting to really help each other, share other ideas, and care about each other. You know, and that's not something I ever grew up in business hearing about. You weren't supposed to care about the other guy. Just focus on yourself. But I think that in these times, it's better. We are sort of adrift, and it does help to circle the wagons and help each other here. We're like the old pioneers trying to figure out a way across the country, the dangerous plains here. All right, well, good. Well, I'm fascinated. I wish we could have more time. We got about 5 minutes left here in this interview. Let's talk a little bit about your business itself, the business of cybersecurity. That's got to be a booming, booming field.
It is. It's sort of sad that it is, and the reason why I say that is because, you know, if we had no crime, no computer crime, then you wouldn't need companies that do what we do, but that's largely not true. I always say we're a little tick mark in a big army of mm-hmm. people that are working towards this, the betterment of our security, because it has residual impacts to our communities with respect to things that we sort of take for granted, like the water purity, the food sources, the electricity, all those things are interconnected. And if, you know, we have to work together to help make them safe. And part of doing that is there's a cyber aspect to that. And that's what we're trying to help.
I'm a big watcher of things like C-SPAN. I was a political science major in college, so I'm fascinated with international relations and stuff here. And one of the things, doesn't get a lot of play, not on the first page, but it is in a lot of symposiums and congressional hearings, and a lot of people talking about it, is this whole growing danger of cybersecurity. Do you ever get involved? Is it strictly you're trying to protect a company from the employees stealing stuff or competitors stealing stuff or people getting in and getting the credit cards so they can rip everybody off? Or is any of it go bigger than that? Because what I'm getting at is it's an awful lot of talk. The Chinese and some other people and North Korea and other people are actively probing our cyber defenses here, and that the next conflict that happens may not be a hot shooting war. It may be a war where both sides try and crash each other's computers.
That's true, and that does happen, and it happened a few years ago where Russia took down the country of Estonia, and it was all without firing a bullet. I mean, those are real-life things. We see it all the time. We're trying to help mitigate the risks that allow those things to happen, and that's what our mission is. You know, I'm retired Air Force. I wore a uniform, but just because I took it off didn't mean I quit serving the country, and that's what we're doing.
Right.
And a lot of people in my company are veterans or disabled veterans.
Well, again, it's
understand that.
I don't know why, but we seem to have come across a number of these. I was trying to look for it. I can't find the gentleman in South Carolina we talked to about 6 months ago, not on this show, but one of the other shows on the network here. And he had been, like you, had worked for cybersecurity in the government, but not for the Air Force. He had actually worked for the NSA, the National Security Agency, out of college. And then left that after 20 years or something, and this is his second career. I guess he retired from that and opened up a cybersecurity company down in the Southeast that mostly works with big corporations and stuff. And then on another show, we had somebody, I just pulled this one up, a gentleman whose name is Scott Nelson. He's the president of a company called Security and Risk Management Group, Security and Risk Management Group here in Southern California in Orange County. And he's a former deputy assistant director for the FBI, from which he retired. As he said, everybody has to retire by the time you're 40 or something. And then he went on and became head of security for Time Warner Motion Picture. So, and again, three people that left government positions and opened up private and not just security firms, not just guys with black glasses and the men in black kind of image, but people who are there actively trying to harden your defenses against internal crime, against external espionage, and those who would just get in and steal your stuff and precious contacts. As we collect all this stuff electronically, I guess it must be getting harder and harder to hold on to these assets.
Right. The perpetrators, they're always getting more advanced. You try to stop the low-hanging fruit type items, and then you force them to up the game, which is a sign of progress in itself.
But it seems like a never-ending game, because as you improve, then they only get smarter, and then you have to keep... It seems like kind of an endless cycle of getting better, and then they try and outsmart... They, whoever they are, these hackers, whatever, try and outsmart people, and it seems like it's kind of a never-ending struggle here. Is there ever... We're never going to get it totally hardened, I guess, unless we come up with something other than computers.
Right. When you dig down into the motivation of why somebody wants to do that, that's really the core reason. If you can solve that, then there's no need.
And I never understood these people that just maliciously put out... I understand people that want to steal credit cards. They're just thieves, like anything else. They want to run a scam. They want to get credit card information or bank account. It worries me, but it doesn't shock me. I guess internal theft, that's always going to happen. People are angry. I didn't get mine, so they're going to take these secrets and sell them or whatever. But the people that just... this image we have of this 16-year-old kid sitting in his parents' basement somewhere, this sort of loser mentality who just thinks he'd get a thrill out of anonymously crashing some computer somewhere for the phone company or for the Defense Department, or just spreading a virus that maliciously will cause people harm on their home computers. I never got that. Maybe you can explain that to me. What is it? Just a feeling of power? Is it a feeling of importance? Because nobody knows you. You're anonymous when you do this.
Yeah, there's a whole psychology to describe what you're talking about there. But I think one way, as people that care about the community and the kids, in fact, I walked for however long we've been on the phone now. I just left a group of kids. I told them I'll be back in a little bit. I'm training them in this national competition called Cyber Patriot. They're a group of teenage kids that are in the ROTC program in the school, and I'm mentoring them how to secure computers so that they can compete in this competition for the national championship that's going to be held in Washington, D.C. So starting at this level here, where these kids are in, you know, 9th grade, 10th grade, letting them learn that, you know, you're clicking on Facebook, you're doing all these fun things on your computer, but be aware that these are some things that people will try to do to sort of bait you into.
Sure.
I think it's to do with education and just cultural kind of help the community and mentor kids, and maybe we're not going to fix everybody.
No.
But there's, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I've read enough about the psychology that inspires people to do what you talked about earlier.
Fascinating.
And it's damaging, you know.
Well, I wish we had more time to do this. I would definitely like to have you back on at some other time, because you've definitely touched a nerve. The whole idea of creating a different business model is fascinating. That's what we're always hoping to learn in this show. You've given us a huge example. We're just looking for little examples how we can all improve our businesses. And at the same time, this notion of cybersecurity is a hot topic. As I said, we've had three or four other people on different aspects talking about it, and it's something that every business is worried about. Whether you're a mom and pop shop or a major corporation, you're afraid of identity theft, you're afraid of people hacking into your bank account, you're afraid of losing your customer data lists and whatever proprietary information you have on your computers, you're afraid of it just crashing and all going down someday, and you're out of business for 24 hours while all your computers are dead. You know, all of those things are issues that people worry about and talk about. So I think we'd have a lot more to discuss down the road here. Let's wrap up by giving us some idea of how people can get in touch with you. If you've touched them today, either live or later, you know, this lives on as a podcast for months and months. We'll get thousands of people literally downloading it through iTunes and other places if it's like every other show we've done. How do people reach you? First of all, would you be open to people reaching you? And if so, how do they do so?
First, I want to acknowledge that, to me, the thanks goes to Matthew Kelly for writing this great book and inspiring a whole new movement of, when you dig down to it, it's basic.
Yeah, I definitely want to check that out, and any other books like it. The only one I've known is this other book I mentioned, yeah.
Anybody can email me. It's kind of a long email, but it's
okay, go ahead.
Jeffrey, that's Jeffrey, dot Jaime, Jaime, at Taurian.us. That's Taurian. .us.
Okay.
And you check out our website at Taurian.us.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today here. And thank you for becoming part of our community here. You know, this radio show is like all the radio shows on this new Internet Talk Radio Network, designed to facilitate conversations, to bring people together. We view it kind of like a little campfire on the Internet, people to get together and share ideas, share stories, share experiences, so that we can all learn from each other. And I'm going to have to go back and listen to this again, because you came up with so many ideas and books and names and thoughts. I'm not sure I could digest it all at once here.
Well, I appreciate your reference, too, and also for the invitation to be part of it. And hopefully it does help.
Yeah, hopefully it touches somebody, or at least leads somebody to think, okay, I'll check out not just your website, but maybe the book that you mentioned, the one I mentioned, and maybe that'll spark some change or some creativity on their part here.
Great.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a break. We're overdue for a minute or two here, and then we'll come back with our next guest right after this.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Large companies with complex sales channels have sophisticated lead management needs. They require customized lead management systems and services and integration with additional systems. That's why, since 1981, these companies have relied on SmartLead by AdTrack, the only full-service lead management company with customized systems for lead management, Salesforce automation, and analytics. These systems are managed by each client's dedicated account manager and are integrated with SmartLead's in-house marketing services that include a contact center, email marketing services, print services, direct mail and fulfillment, and an ISO-certified warehouse. SmartLead by AdTrack. 3 decades of pioneering lead management best practices and systems for complex lead management needs. For more information, visit our website at smartlead.com.
If you are a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gaffella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitment in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plan and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Okay, and we're back. You're listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. Normally, we don't bunch all the commercials up together, but I'm a little shorthanded here today. Normally, I'm working the board, and somebody else is handling in the studio interviewing people, but today I get to do both. So I needed a couple minutes there to try and reach our next guest, who unfortunately, maybe there's a mix-up, we weren't able to reach him. We left a message. We'll see if he calls back in the next couple minutes here. So I'm going to do what we call ad-lib. I'm going to use this time here to give our next guest a couple minutes, see if they can reach him. If they can't, we'll end the show on a little early today here. And what I wanted to talk about was what we just heard. I get a chance to listen to literally hundreds of businesses now. As the executive producer at this network, octalkradio.net, we now produce about 20 shows a week. These are weekly live shows, once-a-week shows, like this one, where somebody is talking to a business owner, business executive in some field. This is kind of a broad-ranged one. This show, they talk to people in all sorts of disciplines and businesses because what they're trying to get at is some common ideas, some common themes. What are you experiencing in your industry? How did you get started? How are you running your business? What hurdles are you facing, and how are you overcoming them? That's pretty simple. You know, then that's pretty applicable to whatever you're in, cybersecurity or a flower shop. You know, we've all got something that motivated us to be entrepreneurs We've all got some challenges we had in starting the business, particularly if it's something nobody's ever seen or heard of before, like an internet talk radio station when I started this. And we've all got various hurdles, some of which we can't control, the economy. But even in that, there are ways to focus your business, to reduce your staff, expand your machinery, expand your staff. I don't know. Whatever it is, we're all finding ways to adapt and survive and thrive in many cases. And one of the messages I hear over and over again is, even in the worst of times, and this certainly qualifies as one of the worst economic periods in modern American history, right up there close to the Great Depression is this Great Recession. Even in these times, people are succeeding. Things are growing. Seeds are being planted, and they're sprouting up. And some people, dare I say it, are hiring or are trying to hire if they can find the right people. That's a counterintuitive message to what you hear on traditional media. Day in and day out, we're bombarded by the bad. We had a show this morning. It's the first time I've heard this. I'm in my mid-50s. We had a guest who was in his 30s who had started a company in South Carolina. And I don't even remember what the company was. And whatever it was he was doing, what struck me out of that conversation was he didn't have a television. I thought, boy, am I out of it. You know, this new generation, they don't have landlines, they have cell phones. They don't have televisions, they have the internet. And so I thought, I dismissed it as that. But he talked a little more and he said it really is because he's tired of the negativity. We all know it's bad. We all know the challenges. You don't have to remind me that business is harder than it's ever been. But don't just tell me that. Give me some good ideas here, too. Hey, let's hang on and see if this is our guest here. I'm going to play a quick commercial and see. We'll be right back.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
All right. Not who I thought it was. Phone rang, but it was somebody else for one of our upcoming shows here. So let's just finish on this point here, that we can become caught up in the negative cycle, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You think it's bad enough, you start seeing the bad in everything, you stop trying, you say, what the heck, why bother, and give up. Or you get so down, you can't get up. So part of the purpose of this isn't to be Mary Poppins or Little Mary Sunshine and, oh, look, it's getting brighter over there and while it's pouring rain outside your house here. It really is to do more than that. It's more than just to inspire. It's more than just to say, hang on. It's to give you honest-to-goodness, real-life examples of people just like you out there in the marketplace, out there in the front lines, getting shot at every day, and how they are surviving, how they are living through it, and how they are growing and blossoming and changing. Maybe what doesn't kill you helps you. That idea. So we really do, maybe it's just because of the nature of the people we talk to, maybe it's the nature of the show, but honest to God, if you listen to our show all the time, any of these shows, you think everything's great. Because everybody we're talking to, while they've had trouble, while they've had things, have found a way to overcome it. Really. And I think it's amazing. We were talking to a guy in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago who has one of the largest office furniture stores. You think you got a tough try selling office furniture today. People are closing offices, not remodeling, not adding new offices. And if they are, they're not buying the $10,000 desk anymore. Give me those particle board desks. Those will do. So he's had to adapt. And in many ways, he said, our sales are up, but our profits are down because we're selling much cheaper merchandise. And how we're having to work harder to sell that merchandise. We used to just be order takers. Now we got to go out and measure the space. We got to give them some creative ideas. How can they pack 10 more people in the same room without renting a bigger office suite? How can they get more functionality out of it so that they get more production out of the people there? The physical setup dictates how well the organization communicates and flows in many cases. And all of these things, he said, we've really had to become much more consultants and much less just middlemen that completed the transaction here. And I hear that a lot. People are saying, I'm having to work harder for less money. But the good news is I'm learning new skills. I'm learning new services. We're finding other things we can do for our clients so that when things turn up, and they will, don't they always? When things get better, we're going to be a lot stronger. We're going to be leaner and meaner, sure, but we've also learned to do it better. And I really believe that as we come through this, that's going to cause a real renaissance. It's got to lead to something. We've all, those who have survived and those who have thrived, there is something to be learned in that. Maybe it's that it's just a new reality, like people love to say, the new norm. Maybe it's a new way of doing business. And if it is, then you better take advantage of these times, learn the lessons that others are offering you every day, and adapt, because the old way ain't coming back. That's all I got to say today here. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation we had earlier. Had I known our second guest, we had a mix-up with our second guest, I would have continued talking to our first guest, because that was fascinating to me. Here's a guy who's not only on the cutting edge of cybersecurity, which we're all fascinated with, I am, and we all should be concerned about, whether you're a one-man shop or 1-million-person shop, and he's trying to not only plug a hole, but he's trying to do it in a different way, that his people feel empowered, that his people feel good when they go to work, that the company itself is channeling their energy and creativity, not just for its own profit, but for theirs, too. And not just profit, but, I don't know, what are we going to call it? In my old hippie days, it would be, you know, a higher plane of consciousness. Maslow would say achieving your higher needs here. Whatever it is, it's more than just making money. And I find that refreshing and exciting and interesting. I hope it, we're all talking about a renaissance, a cultural renaissance, a revival, restoring America. I think that's what made this country great, and I think it's the core of what will work us again. So enough of my soapbox today here. I just encourage you to listen to these things. And if you do, listen to it again maybe, if you really think there's something there. Get in contact with the people. This isn't just a listening medium. This is a communal station. This is about communing, sharing, talking with, to other people. Everybody gives out their email address. I wonder how many people ever get contacted. So if Jeff touched you in any way, if you're curious about it, whatever you do, he made the offer, take him up on it. Send him an email. See what he says. See if he can help you get through your struggles today and take your company to another level. To raise the level of your game, as John McEnroe used to say. You know, he'd get in the semifinals and the tennis matches. He said, I had to learn to take my game to another level. That's what we're all trying to do here on this show and others. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you will tune in again tomorrow for more of our programs here on Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, coast to coast, only on octalkradio.net.